Whenever you're ready now.
Hello, pals, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward Live, the podcast that celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us celebrating all things sibling, fraternal, and sisterly. Famously, Romulus and Remus were suckled by wolves before Romulus killed his brother and founded a city. Thank goodness they went that way round, otherwise we'd all be off on holiday to the Italian city of Rheims next year. Obviously, that is a very old-fashioned way of founding a city. I'm currently working on a proposal for the British government to found some commuter towns after cancelling my brother on TikTok after we both necked some almond milk hidden inside a stuffed toy. And with me is my brother from an Irish mother, my twin kin, my chum from another mum, my confrere from an Outre-mer, my fella from another Bella, the dapper Kane to my barely able. It's Barry McStay.
Thanks, brother. I'm sure that would, like, we would probably spawn some really horrible Reddit fan fiction if we lent into this too heavily.
Are you even a podcast if you hadn't had some slash fiction written about you?
Oh, we haven't gone looking for that. Nell, who does a lot of our internet research, is here at the back of the room. So, Nell, can we delegate to you to look up Barry slash Ben slash fucking or some sort of variation on that would be ideal. Who here has been to or listened to any Worst Foot Forward shows before? Hey, who here hasn't? Yes, proud newbies. Well, we're a podcast that celebrates all the worst things in the world. We have guests on each week and we talk about the world's worst something. And to give you a flavour of the sort of thing we're into, we thought we'd give you a few facts from past episodes. We recently did an episode with Ivan from The Traitors, off of BBC's The Traitors. We did the world's worst traitor. And we learned that Guy Fawkes, when he was being arrested under the Houses of Parliament, gave the very unconvincing fake name of John Johnson to the people arresting him.
And when we did an episode with the brilliant comedian Daisy Earle, we talked about the world's worst hotel, and we discovered that for a handsome fee, you can stay overnight in Joseph Stalin's country Dachau, where one room is a replica of his study, complete with a wax effigy of Uncle Joe hard at work at his desk.
Yeah, to watch you sleep. And when we did our World's Worst Inventor episode, we learned about one of Japan's most prolific inventors, a chap called Dr. Noshiro Nakamatsu, whose many ideas, he claims, come to him either in his 24-carat gold bathroom or while holding his breath underwater in his swimming pool 0.5 seconds before passing out. Yeah, he does the asphyxie wank approach to invention.
That is some kinky invention.
Yeah. As I said, we always have guests on the show, and we're lucky to be joined by two guests this week to talk about the world's worst siblings. So our guests today are the co-hosts of the podcast Lex Education, where the smart one teaches the dumb one stuff that most 14-year-olds would know. Much like our podcast, isn't that right, Ben?
Yes, it is, sir.
One of them is all over the internet. Her viral Twitter thread about fancying the Liverpool men's football club manager led to a book called Klopp Actually. And her second book called Pivot was all about a ramshackle small-time netball team, because that was the obvious progression from Liverpool Football Club. She's been on Live at the Apollo, Mock the Week, Roast Battle, Hypothetical, and Celebrity Mastermind. No, she didn't win. Curse you, Alistair McGowan! And she has had great success as a multi-award-winning stand-up, as a member of the gang at Comedian Cinema Club, and as one of the finest MCs on the circuit with her crowd work videos, a joy to behold. And she's so busy, we had to lie to her and tell her Jürgen Klopp would be here tonight. Sensibly fact-checking us. And her other guest is her brother. It's Laura, Lex, and Ron! She's everything, he's just Ron.
Also, can I just say my questions were longer than McGowan's?
Well, you really got over that, haven't you, Laura?
No.
It's only 2 points in it or something, wasn't there?
Yes.
Wow. And you were miles ahead of everyone else on that show as
yes.
well.
Yeah, surely the most insulting thing Alistair McGowan could have done is do impressions of all the other contestants as he canters into winning.
So we're having siblings on the show, talking about the world's worst siblings. And usually, as a sort of a warm-up question, we have guests on. We ask, what you're worst at in the world. And we've had Laura on before, Ron's first time on the show.
Hello.
And so we thought we might ask Laura what Ron's worst at in the world and vice versa, and see if we manage the whole hour-long record without one of them walking out. Laura, what's your brother worst at in the world?
Podcasting.
Do continue.
Podcasting is essentially an audio form. There's quite a few of our listeners here today, and it feels like Ron goes out of his way every episode to spoil it by either announcing, well, this episode's dog shit before it begins, oh, we've had some really good ones lately, but this one is unlistenable. Then he proceeds to make it unlistenable by either snacking on olives that require his fingers to be constantly licked between each and every word. It's a nightmare for anyone. Not, you wouldn't even have to have sensory issues to not want to listen to that. It's just horrible. He also veers wildly from shouting while sitting right next to the microphone to just lying down far away and whispering and declaring, we'll sort it out in the edit.
And it's a real shame Ron couldn't be here today.
And I knock my microphone.
You
and I
smack
have a loud
the microphone.
Chair.
You play with the wires. You will not sit in the chair that makes no noise, or you declare to do it halfway through. You're constantly hydrating.
For listeners at home, we have Ron manacled to a rack with a with a Britney mic on.
You promise the listeners things that you do for 1 week, and then go, "Oh, that bit's over now," and stop doing them. You overpromise rewards that they don't deserve, quite frankly, that lead to me eating 8 boiled eggs on a random Tuesday afternoon. You're a nightmare.
Barry, I don't think we should have asked this question.
No.
But
we definitely owe Ron right of reply.
I mean, we totally do, but that felt a little bit like, you know, when you're at like a Christmas meal and there's like an elderly relative and you make the mistake of asking them how they are and they bloody well tell you. Well, that is, that's just what happened. So, yeah, the case for the loyal opposition, Ron, what is wrong with your sister?
Well, I mean, I was going to say science for obvious reasons, but I want to go deeper and just
information
retention in general. Like, if I didn't know you for many years before this, as a competent woman that does things, I'd be so worried that I'd just get dropped into this podcast with you.
I would love to see Laura's business card that says, "Hello, Laura Lex, a competent woman that does things."
But she'd have misspelled competent.
Absolutely.
A woman who does things.
Oh, no.
Different business card.
To be fair, that's how you're going to get Klopp. Hi, I'm a competent woman who does things. Oh, yeah.
I mean, just like we can be halfway through a sentence and she's forgotten like the words that I introduced at the top of it.
Yeah, they're stupid words, though.
Things that you've written down that you now no longer comprehend.
Yeah.
It's what's nice to know, and I include myself in this as well, that, you know, we've all got to prepare for the coming days of global conflict and war, and that some people, like Ron, are going to be useful working for, like, MI5 or MI6 intelligence, and then people like Laura and myself, if we're lucky, we'll be in the entertainment corps. Mm-hmm. But that is it. We're just going to be...
More likely you're on a spit.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, there's always a job for a woman who does things.
Well, shall we get down to brass tacks?
Yeah, let's.
Now that we've caused a real rift, we have sat Laura and Ron as far away from each other as possible.
Yeah, you should do. Because obviously you've got siblings as well. You've got two brothers.
I've an older and a younger brother. Yes, I'm the middle one.
You're the middle one. You're the filling in the sandwich. How do you get on with them?
I don't. Don't bother.
I feel like, all right.
Listen, he's like, if you have siblings, I have an innate distrust of people who are like, oh, my siblings are my best friends. Or, yeah, I love spending time with my mum. It's like, you don't. You go to family events and you see each other at funerals. You shake hands. We'll say same time when Aunt Nora passes away. Yeah, fine.
Right.
Yeah,
cool.
I think that's the sensible approach to siblings. Whereas you get on very well with your brother, but he is like 10 years older than you.
He is 30.
I think if you're too close in age, I think that's an issue.
That does help. Yeah, I'm the I'm not even an accidental child. I am the reconciliation child. Because I discovered this when I got older. My mum and dad broke up at the end of the 70s, got back together at the start of the 80s, and made me. And just imagine how entitled that makes me feel.
You were the difficult second album.
I am the Benz that followed Pablo Honey, motherfucker.
I can top that.
About the Benz.
Yeah?
I can top that.
Go on, then.
My mum wanted to be sterilized before I was born, but they cut the wrong ovary.
That was the worst trouble I ever got into as a kid.
What, was
I
that
didn't
the start
perform
of
the
being
surgery. Yeah. But Mum refers to him as her miracle baby. And I said, miracle baby, hospital botch up. I was never been in more trouble ever.
Oh, my God. You're the version of a miracle that is like seeing Jesus cut in the middle of a tomato. That is
100%, but I'm the best kid. Like,
well, let's find out, listeners. So, as we've said, we're talking about the world's worst siblings this week. And Barry, you're going to start us off.
Yeah, so I did a... There's sort of a few different metrics you could apply to this. I read about people who have too many siblings, first of all. And there's a Pakistani family who I found who... There's only 9 in the family, that's not too bad. The father is Amir Ali and the mother is Khudeja. And they have 7 children, Sindhu, twins, Sasui and Sapna, Amir, Abar, and male twins, Amar and Amar.
What?
Yeah, I know, they're spelt differently, but to my eye, they're pronounced the same. But the remarkable thing about this family is they all have the same birthday, every single one of them. Yeah,
ooh.
All of them born on August the 1st. And not only that, it's Amir and Khudeja's wedding anniversary. They got married on their own birthday. Yeah, one woman in the audience has went, no.
Is that surely not just like a traditional thing where I've gone, just for ease of brain, we're going to condense all of our birthdays into one easy to manage birthday?
Yeah, I think at one point they will have probably gone, okay, we cannot have sex for 3 months after our anniversary. Then we have sex that day to guarantee the next one is the same birthday. Do you think they roll Christmas into it? They just go, let's have Christmas in it, let's have Easter.
Her womb is like a vending machine. That is just astonishing.
Then I read about sort of larger groups of children. So the Solomon Octuplets, who are reasonably famous, they were born in 2009 in Bellflower in California. And they're the world's first set of octuplets, all of them to survive infancy. A lot of these large pregnancies, they end with a couple of them not making it, sadly. The mother is a woman called Nadia Suleiman, and the father is a sperm donor. I should say a military-grade sperm donor. Yeah. Apparently, he once dated Nadia. And Nadia's ex-husband, Marco Gutierrez, divorced Nadia 3 years before the kids were born and very vehemently denied being the biological father, presumably to avoid the massive child support. And they were delivered via cesarean section, which involved 46 medical personnel, and apparently it was practiced twice before the... I don't know how you practice... cesarean on our kids.
Puppies.
That is going to be coming up in Laura and Ron's next episode, where they...
they apparently carried them 31 weeks, and they were born over the course of 5 minutes. That's like,
right,
like a tennis ball launcher just coming out. Boom. The doctors apparently had anticipated 7 babies, so the 8th came as a surprise. Little bonus one. And
I just want nothing to be a surprise in that situation.
Right? Yeah.
Especially not like a whole other human. That is woof. I mean, I suppose it could have been... never mind. That's not funny. That's just a tragedy.
Let's just leave a gap for all of you to imagine what Laura was about to say.
Edit break. What do your stings sound like?
We're going to use that from now on. These kids have 6 older siblings as well. So they suddenly went from 6 to 14.
Why were you even trying to have a 7th?
No idea. Apparently they all eat in shifts and some of them sleep on the couch. And the New York Times article a few years after they were born said at age 9, they were small for their age, but they're polite, they cook, they're vegan, and they read 2 books a month. It doesn't say if that's 2 books between all 8 of them. And one better or worse, depending on your viewpoint, Halima Cisse, a couple of years ago, she is the mother, the Malian mother, of the world's only known non-uplets to have survived. And she already had 1 daughter, Sauda, and she went from being an only child to 1 of 10 overnight. Yeah. And then I read about some historical families who'd had lots of kids, and some of these, you know, they're from the 1700s. It's not clear whether this is true or not.
9 babies in you.
Yes.
9 babies.
You're right.
Icon, just for so you know, Barry has bought our traditional snack for live podcasts, which is a pint glass full of marshmallows. Mm. I cannot conceive of putting 9 marshmallows in my mouth. Never mind.
I get uncomfortable when I have like belly. I get uncomfortable when I have a ring of keys in my pocket. Like that's distressing enough. Yeah, I read there's a story from 1760s of a Russian family who apparently
that's 18 legs.
If you're lucky.
Is it better if you think of it as 2 spiders and 1 child? yeah, a Russian family in the 1760s, apparently they had 69 children. The 1750s, another Russian family, I don't know what was in the water in Russia, 57 kids. A German family from the 1400s, 53. More confirmable, a Ugandan mother called Mariam Nabatanzi Babire in 2016. She had had 44 kids by the age of 36. And yeah, at the age of 40, she underwent a medical procedure to prevent any further pregnancies. You would, wouldn't you? and I like this one. This is from the 1680s. Elizabeth.
Well, sorry, was the medical procedure having her husband killed?
It was medically prescribed murder, yes.
Yeah.
And from the 1680s, Elizabeth and William Greenhill, they had 7 sons and 32 daughters, 39 kids. Every one of them, bar one pair of twins, was a single birth. All of those other ones, there's lots of multiple births. That is unreasonable. I don't know. She wouldn't have had any time to do anything else in her life, presumably.
She just spent her life in stirrups with a fucking conga line coming out of her.
Like a clown car.
Yeah.
I read about worst animal siblings before I come to my main suggestion. Sand tiger sharks, they have one of the lowest reproductive rates of sharks, less than a pup a year. And that's partly because of a thing which sounds lovely when you call it adelphophagy, but sounds less lovely when you call it intrauterine cannibalism.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, I think I saw them play at Download.
Apparently, they can have as many as 50 embryos, and then one of the sand tiger shark embryos reaches 10 centimetres or so in length. It starts eating the smaller embryos until there's one left. Like that bit in Skyfall, where the villain describes the rats in a barrel until the rat eats all the other rats, yeah.
Oh, I was thinking of it being like Squid Game.
Yes, or like that, yeah. Shark Game. And apparently, the mothers can get pregnant from multiple different fathers, so presumably this is some evolutionary way of one father dominating the others by killing all of its rivals. Fun fact. Isn't the animal world beautiful? They don't feature that on Blue Planet, do they? And then I read about rival siblings. You mentioned Cain and Abel, Romulus and Remus. The Wilkes Booths. Yeah. John Wilkes Booth assassinated Abraham Lincoln. His older brother, Edwin, is considered one of the finest ever American stage actors. His Hamlet was apparently the greatest Hamlet of the 19th century. And he had an abiding fear of ivy vines and peacock feathers. Odd family. His brother had an abiding fear of American presidents, you know. And John was also an actor, so there was a little bit of fraternal rivalry. And their younger brother was an actor as well. All 3 of them apparently once appeared in a production of Julius Caesar. And they fell out, Edwin and John Wilkes Booth. Apparently John Wilkes was obviously jealous of his brother's success. And John Wilkes Booth supported the Confederacy, whereas Edwin supported the Union. And in the winter of 1864, Edwin Booth, the famed, acclaimed actor, saved the life of a certain Robert Todd Lincoln, the son of the American president. He fell off a train platform, and he didn't mind the gap, and Edwin pulled him to safety. And
a real life while you were sleeping.
Like that, yeah. And in the way brothers do, presumably John Wilkes Booth wanted an American dynastic presidential family member of his own, and immediately broke it once he got it by assassinating Robert's dad, but 5 months later. But for rival acting siblings, I've gone to this for my suggestion of the world's worst siblings. I've gone for Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. Now, 2 great actors of the golden age of Hollywood. For about 90 years, their entire lives, they hated each other. Olivia had trouble accepting the idea of having a younger sister when Joan was born. Joan resented her mother for favouring Olivia. Apparently Joan was quite sick a lot of the time, and their mother would be very... So it'd be like, you stay in bed, Olivia can do this. She would say, Livy can, Joan can't, which I imagine has a bit of an impact on a child. Olivia would tear any clothes she was meant to give as hand-me-downs to Joan, so Joan would have to repair them. And Olivia de Havilland would also apparently scare Fontaine with dramatic readings of the Bible's crucifixion scene. It's no Very Hungry Caterpillar, is it? while Fontaine would get back by apparently mimicking every word she says, which I think is the bane of every sibling pair ever. In her memoir, Joan Fontaine recalled having fights with Olivia. Apparently she described the hair pullings, the savage wrestling matches, the time Olivia fractured my collarbone. And a profile of them in 1942, there's this quote. At the age of 9, Joan decided she would kill her sister.
Oh, God.
She thought it out carefully. She would let Olivia hit her once, then again. But after the third blow, she would plug Olivia between the eyes. 9-year-old Joan had planned the self-defense strategy to kill her sister. Mervyn LeRoy, who was a producer at Warner Brothers, offered Joan Fontaine a path into the films, following her older sister into films. With a contract, and her mother again said Warner Brothers is Olivia's studio and Joan couldn't use the Havilland surname, so she had to use her father's mother's name or something was Fontaine, so she went with that as the acting name. And then they were both nominated for Best Actress during the 1942 Academy Awards, and Olivia for Hold Back the Dawn and Joan for Suspicion, and Olivia was meant to be the favourite but Joan won the award.
Yeah.
And Olivia congratulated her. And Joan said, no thanks, no thanks. Just turned down the congrats, yeah. And a few years later, Olivia won the first of her two Oscars. And again, Joan Fontaine tried to congratulate her. Olivia said, no, it was absolutely no holds barred at this point. And later on, Olivia de Havilland married a novelist called Marcus Goodrich. And apparently Joan Fontaine said, all I know about Marcus Goodrich is that he's had 4 wives and written 1 book. Too bad it's not the other way around.
Catchy.
Yeah.
So catchy.
Their mother was diagnosed with cancer in 1975, and apparently de Havilland went home to look after her, and Fontaine was on tour with a play and complained that she wasn't invited to the memorial service. Do you need to be invited to a parent's memorial service? I sort of assume you can just show up. And then apparently she showed up anyway and didn't speak to her sister. So she wanted to be invited just so she could blank her sister, presumably. Olivia would refer to Joan as Dragon Lady. At an Oscars reunion ceremony in 1979, the two of them were placed on opposite ends of the stage, much like we've done with Laura and Ron. And 10 years later, again at the Oscars, Joan changed her hotel room when she found out she'd be booked in next to Olivia's. Even with a wall between them, she couldn't be bared to be that close. And my favourite last little fact about them is in Joan's memoir, published in 1978, called No Bed of Roses. Olivia dubbed it No Shred of Truth. Joan said, you can divorce your sister as well as your husband's. I don't see her at all, and I don't intend to. I got married first, got an Academy Award first, had a child first. If I die, she'll be furious because, again, I'll have got there first. And she did die first in 2013. Well done, Joan Fontaine. So, yes, Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine are my worst siblings.
Wow. They sound awful.
Delightful, yeah.
Smashing stuff. Ron, what have you brought to us for the world's worst siblings?
So I saw some of the research that Laura was doing. I wanted to go down a slightly different, non-sort of murdery, incesty kind of vibe. So I bring to the table John Attenborough.
Oh, the
one locked in the attic.
Oh no, the Zeppo of the Attenborough brothers.
Yeah. So you've got obviously David, world-renowned naturalist, voice of the nation, national treasure. Then you've got Richard, Jurassic Park. And then John is
Richard Jurassic Park parents, but ultimately normative determinism won out.
Yeah, the greatest scientist of our age. In that, I heard a great fan theory about Jurassic Park that the two children in it, they are actually grown in the same way the dinosaurs are in the lab, and because you don't see their parents. I don't know if they ever actually refer to them, and they've just been grown and made by Richard Attenborough. No, we're not buying it. Fair enough.
But John Attenborough was only the head of Alfa Romeo in the UK, CEO for UK operations. But.
That's what a failure. So he's a businessman, presumably, and that was one of
his titan of industry, but still the failure. Still.
Was he oldest, youngest?
Youngest, yeah. Grew up in their shadow. Rose as high as he could.
That's there's something nice about the fact that Alfa Romeos famously look good but are absolute dog shit to drive. Finally, which sort of fits the niche of where he's ended up.
Yeah, it's not dinosaurs or real animals. It's just
it also must have been awkward as arse to be like
the director of a motor car company when your brother is one of the most famous voices against climate. Oh my God. Awkward.
Yeah, and your other brother, like, created a fictional park whose inhabitants will eventually die and turn into the fuel for your car.
Did they have any other siblings? Was it just the three of them?
No, just the three of them. No, no other scapegoats. He was categorically the worst Attenborough.
I also, I've not got a picture of him, but I love, and please do this after the show, I love looking at pictures of brothers or sisters of famous people, particularly good-looking people. Look at Brad Pitt's brother. He looks, if you didn't know Brad Pitt existed, you'd be like, that's a good-looking man. But because you know Brad Pitt exists, you're like, oh, they made Brad Pitt wrong. It's like someone tried to construct Brad Pitt from memory. It's really
I've just looked up his Wikipedia, and Richard and David would come up with Sir David Attenborough or Sir Richard. Yeah. It's just John Attenborough. He didn't even get a knighthood. What a failure. this loser. And to any other people on the outside, you'd be like, what an overachieving family. Yeah. From the inside, John, scarred by his brother's achievements.
And also, like, because David Attenborough is one of the 65 companions of honour, isn't he? The king or queen's besties, where I imagine...
Do you imagine he goes over and, like, braids Charles's hair and they watch films together and talk about girls? It's like your professional best friend. Yeah, much like you and I.
Ow! Yes, I imagine that's absolutely what he does. Are you the only two siblings? Or have
no.
You
got...
No, we've got two shit ones as well.
Oh! Cool. And which car company are they executives of?
They're like good people that are helping raise the next generation, you know, by being selfless teachers. Chumps.
Ron's being a selfless teacher. He's just got a dreadful pupil.
I love that you've just taken his word for it. I'm a dreadful pupil.
Yeah.
I'm not selfless.
You're just in it for the money. Okay. In it for the money. The podcast money.
A princely £25 a month.
Very good.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, so suggestion number one from the Lex Education team is John Attenborough, a man with a surname you'd notice, but a face you would walk past in the street. And Laura, what have you brought?
Yeah, so I had a good look. I did get quite stuck on murdering things. Like, there was this one guy, Sultan Mehmed III, who had 19 of his brothers strangled by deaf-mute bodyguards because he wanted to be king and didn't want 19 guys fucking it up for him.
That's like the story that it's probably apocryphal, that St. Basil Cathedral in Moscow, you know, the lovely thing with the onions on top of it, it was apparently built during the reign of Ivan the Terrible. And the story is that he looked upon the finished cathedral and went, God, this is so beautiful. Congratulations, architect. It's the most beautiful thing you've ever made. I shall now... cast out your eyes, so you will never make anything more beautiful again.
Why deaf mute?
So that they couldn't betray him in any way.
But also, that was like an Ottoman tradition. There's a weird thing, like, because we have, in this country, we have... what? No, I'm not going to go at the...
The traditional taking out of the eyes.
No, not that bit. That was a little bit of extra flair.
Yeah.
But in our country, in our very sensible British monarchical system, it's primogeniture, where the eldest, normally son, because patriarchy, takes over. But there, you didn't have any of that, and it was literally the done thing to take out all of your siblings. Yeah. It's just this guy was really very efficient.
Really good at it. Really good at it.
He should have talked to Joan Fontaine.
Yeah, I'll let you punch me 3 times, but after that, strangled. But yeah, I didn't go with him because there wasn't that much information. And then I found a sibling relationship that icked me out for a million reasons. So my... proposal is Cleopatra.
Coming up.
Cleopatra.
So sorry, just have to do it. It's like when someone says DuckTales, you have to go,
woo! Yeah. So there's layers to this. So first of all, she had her first husband, Ptolemy the 13th. He was her brother. He was also only 10 years old.
Oh.
Like, that's disgusting. So yeah, her dad died, the throne went to Ptolemy the 13th, and
the unluckiest of Ptolemies.
Yeah. Middle name Friday. Cleopatra was 18 at the time and married her 10-year-old brother. So, like, oh, that's just nasty to begin with. He's prepubescent and she's 18.
But would you want to? Like, either way around, like, I'm just imagining when, you know, 18, 10-year-olds are just the most annoying
people. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, now, I'm going to have to phrase this unbelievably delicately because I want to point out I'm not condoning incest. But because 18... I am not.
I don't know, if you have to specify that in the podcast.
But 18 and 10, one is like gone through puberty, maybe an adult, the other is prepubescent. Whereas if you're both like 16 and 14, hormones are doing funny things.
This wouldn't be better if he was like fully developed with a fat hog. Like, it's...
Thank you.
I'd say it's better that it's a kid.
Oh, you think it's better than he's...
Oh.
I thought you were backing me up here.
No. I didn't get the kiddies in.
No, it's ick. It's gross.
A lot of them did. A lot of the Egyptian.
Yeah, the Ptolemies all married in and out. Yeah. So she marries him. Then he, I don't know, she steals his Lego or something and he decides to depose his sister wife. So she flees Egypt and goes to Syria and then raises an army and prepares war on her 10-year-old brother.
The thing is, people always say, like, the problem with incest, of course, and you'll back me up with this on the science, is that it can lead to genetic mutations, and that's why the statue of the Sphinx is actually of someone who was a child of Egyptian pharaohs.
Yeah. She leaves Egypt, and then she meets Julie C. And
Judy Covington, singer of "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina."
Yeah, I love that. You know my references. So they become lovers and go back to Egypt. They take the throne back from her brother. Then he dies. She has a little affair with Caesar. Has a little baby, but has to get married again. Does she marry Caesar? No, she marries her other brother, Ptolemy the 14th.
She just had a thing for guys called Ptolemy.
Yeah, but at least he's 14 now, so that's better, isn't it? I don't actually know how old he is. So she's still married to her brother, but she's also still banging Caesar. And then I think Caesar dies, and then Ptolemy the 14th dies. So she's got two dead brother husbands and a dead lover. Then
careless.
She...
then there's a Bananarama song about that.
So then she's in charge of Egypt on her own, having a lovely time. And then she meets Mark Antony, the main love story one. And then, so they're together for quite a long time. And obviously there's nothing icky or incesty there. But then this is the detail that almost icked me out more than the actual brother-sister marriage, was that they had twins and they named them Alexander and Cleopatra. And I just, I don't know.
It's naming her daughter after herself.
Yeah.
Alexander or Cleopatra, Antony and Cleopatra.
Oh, no, Alexander.
Okay,
oh,
fine.
I thought it was Antony. Oh, that doesn't make
bad.
Any
still,
sense.
Still it was kind of creepy. The big question here, of course, and like you two have more to choose from than me and Barry, if you had to marry a sibling, which one would you choose, Laura?
One of our siblings?
Yeah. Yes.
I love that Laura's giving this serious consideration. Rather, some would dismiss this out of hand, but
this is the caliber of guests we get on the show.
Are we thruppling with current partners, or is
good. Sure. That's a fair point. Listen, I think when we get to the stage of incest, polyamory is just an additional little seasoning.
Yeah. I'd like to marry Laura's husband, so.
Yeah. You'd like to? Come on, we'd all like to marry Tom. But yeah, but in-laws, yeah. Oh, the entire audience wants to marry Tom.
I have to be clear, Tom isn't in there. That isn't Tom clapping.
No, that's not Tom clapping. But can you imagine that? I was like, thank you for the consent, Tom.
He's a popular dude.
Yeah. He is.
He doesn't like it when we talk about him on the podcast. No. There was a big pegging segment recently.
He got real mad about the pegging. Just to be fair, I said he
wouldn't do it. Anyway.
Let's not talk about this on another podcast.
That worries me that you do a science podcast. What are you pegging him with, a Bunsen burner? Switched off, obviously.
I think I'd marry older sister of the podcast. She can really cook.
Okay, no, that's fair. Fair. No, that's good. Yeah, so someone's going to be bringing game to the marriage. All right, nice. And you're throuppling with your brother-in-law.
We'd never get out of bed. We'd just play Magic the Gathering and just
the dream. Can I add be a fourth? Yeah.
How are you at Minecraft?
I can learn. Teach me. Teach me, daddy nerd. So the two of them. Committed suicide together.
I don't know how much of this is fact and how much of it is what's that word?
Fiction.
Yeah.
You see what I was saying about information retention?
What's that A word I'm trying to think of? Anthropological.
Anthropological?
No.
Apocryphal.
Thank you.
Well done, audience.
What was I saying?
if they committed suicide.
Oh, yeah. So there was a big war, and then Mark Antony got told that she died, and he fell on his sword, and then she drank poison. I don't think the asp thing is true. So it's like there's a bit of an argument that they were the inspiration for the end of Romeo and Juliet. Which doesn't make any sense, because didn't he literally write
a different
use that ending for that play. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, dead now, of course. But
yeah, that'll happen with the passage of time.
Yeah. Alas,
they are dead. Okay, so
John Attenborough's dead too, if that's a thing that we should be.
Yeah, I mean, Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. Spoiler: my suggestion is also dead. So a nice level playing field with everyone 6 feet underneath it. To begin with, the thing that annoys me most about my sibling is when they cramp your style, right? They just get in the way of you doing the things
Preach.
You want to do.
I can't cramp your style because you never invite me to anything. I literally had to make you do a podcast with me before.
And Ron, how does that make you feel?
Does it make me feel like I want to invite her to stuff?
Let's chuck in the comedy trivia. Let's just turn it into a counselling podcast. Yeah.
So it's difficult and annoying when you are trying to achieve a lot both socially and at work and academically, and your brother just cramps your style by doing the absolute opposite of what you want to do with your life. So let me tell you about a gentleman called Albert Goering. This is a happy story. I'm starting with a happy story.
Okay.
Obviously, a lot of you will have heard about Hermann Goering, who was one of
sidebar. Do our audience know that Hitler had a sister called Bridget who lived in Liverpool for quite a long time?
Yeah. And another one called I think she was a half sister. He had a sister called Pauline as well.
Pauline
was,
Hitler.
Which reminds me.
Pauline Hitler.
Sidebar, because I was talking about this last night, there's a wonderful Geordie comic called Gav Webster who always talks about the phrase that, oh, he's bad, but you should meet his brother. And always uses Hitler as an example, that's going, oh, yeah, you know, he invaded Poland and then he took the Sudeten land and he ruined half of France and he committed awful crimes, but oh, you should have met his brother. Kenny Hitler. Anyway, so I love Albert. Goering, basically, there's a chance that his father was actually Jewish because according to the article I read, a Jewish aristocrat banned his mother about a year after he was born. So that already gives the sort of historical foundation.
Encyclopedia Britannica has really done recent years.
But he's a great guy. So when sort of the Nuremberg laws came in, he did his best to contravene them and help out Jewish people. So he saw some Jewish women being forced to clean the street, and he went down and started helping them. And when a German officer stopped and recognised who he was as the brother of Hitler's right-hand man, he made everyone stop and go home. He's like, dude, you are embarrassing us. Stop it right now. He worked with a Jewish guy in business, Oscar Pilsner, and the guy was sent to a concentration camp. And so Albert Goering used his his brother's name to get Pilsner and his family set free and also out of Germany. Mm. And you'd think, you know, what were the ruthless lot the Nazis were, that Hermann might kill him? And instead, he just went, Albert, fucking stop it, mate. You are making, you are making me
this
look
is bad. My Reich!
Yeah.
Be like Sweller Braverman working in Millets.
That's what we need to do to secure the... We've got to find the good Braverman sister, yeah, if we can. So, yeah, and he basically, he ended up being put on trial at the Nuremberg trials, but they basically, they realised that he was a good Goering. So, who's a good Goering? You're a good Goering.
Good Goering, good Goering, yes. As Brucey never said.
Yeah. Next, I want to tell you about... This is quite creepy, but we've already had incest, so let's go there. I want to talk about something called... Do you know what a folie à deux is? You're the scientist. Do you know what a folie à deux is?
Nope.
No. No, folie à deux is like a shared psychotic episode or a shared hallucination.
Oh, right.
And it's really hard to... hallucinations and psychosis are quite bizarre and unsettling in individuals, but it's when you share them out of nowhere, it's very strange. So...
Our listeners really understand that feeling. They have it every Monday.
So I read about a pair of Swedish twins called Ursula and Sabina Eriksson. And in 2008, Ursula lived in America. Sabina lived in Ireland with a husband and two children. And in May of that year, Ursula went to visit Sabina. And out of nowhere, they unexpectedly took off and landed in England, and leaving Sabina's children behind. They visited a police station and reported that Sabina was worried about the children. After that, they went to London by bus, but they were kicked off of the bus for acting strangely and refusing to check their bags. And they were then reported to the police on suspicion of having bombs. They didn't, and the police went, all right, you're a bit weird, but you're free to go. Next that we saw of them, there was a crew on the M6 motorway filming a show called Motorway Cops, and they saw the two women walking down the middle of the M6 motorway, and the police started trying to talk to the women, brought them in, when Ursula then ran back out into traffic and was run over by a truck. I know, right? And while she was being attended to, Sabina ran back onto the motorway and was hit by a small car. Ursula tried to get up and tell the police that they weren't real police and they should leave her alone, and she started attacking them, at which point Sabina, like a weird witch twin, then got up and ran away and also assaulted a police officer. I cannot emphasise enough, these were perfectly normal women until this happened.
Wow.
At that point, she decided that the policeman was trying to steal her organs, but eventually, with the help of a passerby, both sisters were put in an ambulance. It took six people to wrestle Sabina into the ambulance.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Her organs are very heavy.
It's very stupid and I love you.
Thank you.
Sorry, is this a shared psychotic episode where they just had shrooms or something?
It seems like it. It's bizarre. I mean, it keeps going. They were eventually released from police custody, and Sabina was invited to stay in the home of a gentleman she'd met soon afterwards, but she kept being odd. She kept talking about having poisoned cigarettes, and eventually she stabbed the guy to death. Again, normal people who just... Something happened.
Not until the stabbing. I was ACAB, baby. You good?
It's utterly, utterly bizarre.
So the theory, have any of the audience heard of the dancing plague? The 1500s. Yeah, it's a sort of mass hysteria that struck Central Europe, where a load of people just started dancing wildly for several days on end. And there's lots of theories about what caused it, including the idea that they all just ate a batch of poisoned bread or bread that had like got a weird fungus in it, and it just drove people insane for several days. So maybe they just had a bad sourdough.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that there wasn't more of that about during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Just people going off on a shroom rampage.
Yeah.
But my last two stories, we're going to talk about siblings of American presidents. We've already talked about siblings of an assassin. First of all, Billy Carter, who was like the good old boy brother of Jimmy Carter. And at first he just tried to cash in on like the fame, the reflected glory of his brother.
Wouldn't happen today.
No, absolutely wouldn't happen today. No, of course. and he released a beer called Billy Beer to try and make cash.
Did it sing if you pressed a button? Was it a bass?
No, I'm afraid no, it's not. He also owned a gas station as well, and tried to sort of turn it into a sort of a place of presidential pilgrimage. And a museum, but we
couldn't get tickets to the White House, but there's a Texaco down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. But then he used this and his connections to his brother to do dodgy dealings with the Libyans. And so in 1978, he made a trip to Libya with a group of Georgian businessmen. And then he hosted a Libyan delegation in Atlanta. And during that delegation, he actually negotiated some spare parts for a friend of his who is a scientist called Doc Brown. No. but it got really bad. He was basically registered as an agent of the Libyan government and received anywhere between $200,000 and $2 million.
Oh,
and he almost ruined Carter's presidency. There was a huge senatorial a debate about whether he brought the presidency into disrepute. And eventually he got off, but he was a bit wrong. And he also, on one occasion, urinated in public in front of a group of reporters at dignitaries. but he's not my favourite one. My favourite is what their name is? 1 second. My favourite are Hillary Rodham Clinton's brothers, because they are a pair of absolute schlubs. Tony and Hugh Rodham. So at the end of Bill Clinton's presidency, he dealt with the war in Kosovo, and so it was very important to get as many allies in that region as possible. And Georgia, the other Georgia, the Russian Georgia, not Deep South Georgia, I can describe them better than that, but I got was an important ally. Now, for reasons that I don't fully understand, Tony and Hugh decided that they wanted to do a get-rich-quick scheme that involved importing hazelnuts from Georgia.
Sounds like the plot of a Mel Brooks film.
It does. It feels like it was put some words in a tombola and brought them out. It was bizarre. Now, the problem with this is that the person that they were dealing with was a chap called Aslan Abashidze, and he wasn't a magic lion. But he was the arch enemy of Edward Shevardnadze, who was the president of Georgia. And so at the time that America was trying to build this coalition with the Georgians, Clinton's brother-in-laws were like doing backseat deals about nuts. It is absolutely ridiculous. So it's tough to choose between the two of them, but I think these guys, not least because later on, when Bill stepped down for the presidency, he issued a bunch of pardons, as presidents are allowed to do. One of them was for a drug dealers called Carlos Vignali and Glenn Braswell, who'd peddled a fake baldness cure by mail. And somehow Hugh Rodham managed to get $400,000 for offering legal help as part of this pardon.
Oh.
What I'm saying is, drain the swamp! Drain the swamp! So, our nominations for the world's worst sibling are Barry's nomination of the bitching catfighting sisters Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. Ron's suggestion of John Attenborough, the control Attenborough. Laura's celebration of the Egyptian Targaryens, Cleopatra and Ptolemy.
Targaryens with a P.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Yes, please. And my suggestion of Hugh and Tony Rongan Rodham. It is tricky. I'm gonna discount mine because they were knockabout dodgy secondhand car salesmen, but they weren't that embarrassing.
They were a pile of squirrels in a trench coat by the sound of it.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before that is what the American president is. So yeah, they're...
You know what? There's some Democrats going, should we? Squirrel in the French code 2024?
Yeah. I think I'm... Whilst Olivia and Joan sound awful again, they weren't destructive. And so I'm torn between literally the worst thing a sibling can do of fucking the other sibling. No. Or the most boring sibling possible. And I'd like to emphasise this again. I'm not saying that I endorse incest, but I am more drawn to John Attenborough for just being so underwhelming.
The credit he's been dying for his whole life.
Yeah. So,
David and Richard have never won an episode of this podcast.
But if you join us for when we get the Ouija board out, that might just happen. Before we go, I'm just going to give you some of the best news of the week to try and give us a little bit of joy in an otherwise dark and unforgiving world. And we're going to go to Chicago, where I want to tell you about a woman called Dorothy Hoffner, because she has just broken a world skydiving record. She has been certified as the oldest person to ever skydive. Dorothy is 104 years old.
Oh, yeah! Sorry, correction. Dorothy was
104 years old.
I like the idea that she flew up in a plane and went, come catch me, guards!
Yeah. Well, you know what, like, when people are that old, they're basically made of, like, gossamer threads and hope. So she
floated down like
exactly
a feather.
Exactly right, yeah.
Didn't need a parachute.
No, she was just a papier-mâché human. But I, she took the record from Linnea Ingegard Larsson from Sweden, who is a stripling at 103 years old. She said she loved it. She there's a wonderful picture. She is obviously strapped to a man. let's not kink shame her. And it's the photo. Ron's looking at the photo. The photo is wonderful. Where like he's sort of got his arms like going, I hope it don't crush your granny.
Yeah, she looks kind of like Hoggle from Labyrinth, but as a troll doll.
Yeah. What's incredible is the G-force, because obviously she's 104. Mm. She's wrinkled, but with the force of the air, it looks like she's been ironed. It is.
She's not looked this good in decades.
No, not at all. And she said it was wonderful. It was wonderful being up there for my 105th birthday. I think I'm going to ride in a hot air balloon, which is a little bit of a sort of a step down.
Yeah.
But I look forward to 110th birthday when she's going to do alligator wrestling. So before we go, Laura, Ron, where can people find you, and what can they find you doing when they get there?
Every Monday, there's a brand new episode of Lex Education, wherever you get your podcasts. We firmly recommend you go back to episode one and come along for the whole ride. It makes much more sense. But if you want to dip a toe in and try one and just see if it's for you, pick any of our special episodes from Halloween or Valentine's Day or Christmas or that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely delightful. Where we'll all off to see if we can persuade a bunch of weasels in a plastic map to stand for Prime Minister in 2029. Until next time, this has been Whisper It Forward. Goodbye!